Morning, everybody. I'm going to call the meeting to order, and we are a small crowd at the in person here today, but we have three folks on the phone, Bob Levy, Alice Kuprokomis, and Michael Alexander. And this is a meeting that is a replacement for the missed or canceled meeting that we were going to have in Hillsboro right in the midst of the snowstorm. So still cold, but better weather today to get people out here, and appreciate the commissioners who have been able to at least make this by telephone. It's a short meeting, we're hopeful, but we have some business we need to attend to. And I do need a motion and second to grant a leave of absence to Commissioners Chamberlain, McDonald, Pierce, and Ceruta, who are all out of town.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Second.
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. And I also need to have a motion and second for approval of the minutes of the last regular commission meeting of December 14th, 2016.
Move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Opposed? And that motion carries. For those of you who are on the phone, I'll try to remember not to cut you off, but holler if I forget. Bill's going to do the executive director's report next. Bill?
Okay, this is going to be a much abbreviated version of the executive director's report. The full report is attached to the agenda packet, which is mailed out to the commissioners. And just two things I want to mention. One, since our last meeting, the Environmental Protection Agency has released the record of decision for the Portland Harbor. And it's, I think it suffices to say that we were somewhat disappointed with this record of decision. And I think it's also safe to say that there's a lot of runway here, to mix metaphors, before anything really happens. There's a lot more to happen, and this really sets the stage for another set of negotiations about how to proceed, and that will be years into the future. Not unconnected from this, the port has filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court against the Monsanto Corporation, the principal manufacturer of PCBs, which are the, I guess I would say, the principal contaminant in the lower Willamette. We're not alone. We're, I would say, actually in good company around the country, because this is a very not only widespread but common contaminant, which is a wide range of industrial applications. And we're alleging, and I think there is very good evidence, that Monsanto knew what they had on their hands well before they disclosed it to the public. Again, that's not something that's going to get resolved anytime soon. Otherwise, it's been kind of a wild and woolly month here in Portland. The airport has largely been open, and people have largely been unable to get here as a result of the tremendous volume of snow and ice. But that's all over, and everything is back up and running well. Concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Is there a motion and second to approve the executive director's report?
Move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So that motion carries. I would like to add here that we have had an open social media site with the assistance of Bobby Stedman, who's been doing a great job on the management with us on the commission of the replacement, selection of the replacement for executive director and Mr. Bill Wyatt. And we've received comments. We are taking those all into account. We're working hard at getting our special committee together that'll do the screening, first round of the applicants that we receive from our recruiters. And we'll have more to say about that at a regular meeting on February 8th. So but appreciate the public's comments that we've received so far. I call on Vince at this point, Vince Granato, to introduce the general discussion item of the Portland PTIP. Morning, Vince.
Morning, thanks. So this is a general discussion item that we do every year on our Port Transportation Improvement Plan, which is our 20-year look at our needs and priority projects. Every year we do hold a public hearing for this and later adopt the PTIP in order to meet our regulatory prerequisites for seeking grant funding from federal sources. Transportation continues to be both a strategic advantage for the region and a potential vulnerability. We're a small market, and good access to markets within and beyond our region is critical for the port, as well as the businesses that locate here. The PTIP identifies projects on port facilities as well as projects on facilities owned by other agencies. And these projects are pursued depending on the priorities of the port and our partners, as well as the timing and the fit of the different funding opportunities. It's our blueprint to ensure we are strategic about assessing our needs relative to our customers' interests, and it's our way of ensuring our customers have good access to markets and the region remains attractive for business expansion and growth. For these reasons and others, it's prudent for us to review our transportation needs with you annually and get your feedback on that direction. So Phil Healy, our senior transportation planner, is here to present the PTIP for your review and comment, and then we'll do a public hearing on the document, and which will follow the presentation.
Let me just ask for the folks on the telephone, you can hear Vince in this start intro to this presentation.
Yeah, this is Linda. I can hear most of it. Sometimes it's a little bit garbled, but okay. I can hear most of what Vince said.
Okay, well, that's helpful because we'll have people speak up as they do the presentation. Yeah. And for anybody who's wanting to look at the slides, I think you can do that on your laptop or iPad, whatever. Okay. So has anyone had a problem that wants to look at the slides, bringing them up?
Okay. No, and the video seems fine as well.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Phil, thanks.
All right, thank you, good morning. This is our annual review of the Ports Transportation Improvement Plan, or PTIP. It provides direction for our transportation investment and grant acquisition strategy. The PTIP is comprised of projects that are anticipated to be needed to provide good access to port facilities and properties within and beyond the region. While some of these projects are port funded, others will be funded by other agencies or the private sector, and for that reason, we coordinated our needs with the regional agencies in the state, and the projects must have public review and commission approval annually in order for any of the projects to be eligible for grant funding. This year's PTIP includes 91 projects, not just surface transportation projects such as road and rail, but also marine and aviation capital projects. The PTIP has been made available on our public website, and public notice has been provided to our stakeholders and the public at large beginning in November. The projects in PTIP are derived from facility plans, transportation studies, the port capital plan, and projects needed or required in conjunction with property development. We then use PTIP to inform the project portfolio office and the grant management team about our grant funding priorities and also as input into the regional transportation plan. We then seek funding for priority projects from the most relevant funding sources. The grant funding we obtain meets a portion of that needed to meet aviation, marine, and industrial goals. This is a summary of our grant funding need categories. These are a few examples across the business lines of projects in PTIP, include the Troutdale Reynolds Industrial Park local roads, which we'll be wrapping up this year, the Rivergate Boulevard overcrossing, which is going into design this year, possibility of Terminal 4 capacity expansion, reconstruction of runways at Troutdale and Hillsborough, and navigation as an ongoing equipment need to support the Dredge Oregon. There are many other projects in PTIP that may arise as priorities dependent on business needs. So the next stage is to open the public hearing for comment. After that, we'll hold the record open until the end of the month. We'll finalize PTIP, bring it back to the commission in February. Following that, we'll provide the PTIP for inclusion in regional and state funding processes. Okay, that concludes the presentation.
Thank you. Just one question before we open it for the public hearing. Have we received any online comments along the way since November?
Not yet, no. Okay.
So I will open the public hearing and ask for testimony. Is there anyone who wishes to comment on or discuss the port's transportation improvement plan? Seeing that there are no hands raised or comments to be made, I'll close the public hearing. No action is required at this time. As Phil said, the Port Transportation Improvement Plan will be back before the commission for action next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
And is there any commissioner that would like a presentation of the consent item? And the title of that item is Ground Lease Honeywell International at the airport.
No.
Okay. I take it from the silence, Michael and Bob, you also don't want a presentation.
This is Bob. I don't need a presentation. Okay. Thank you.
And Mike? Motion and second for approval of the consent item.
Aye, so moved. This is Mike.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Vince, ask you to present the first item, personal services contract, Hillsboro Airport Master Plan Study.
Thank you. We're here to ask approval to award a personal services contract to W&H Pacific for a master plan consulting service at Hillsboro Airport. The last master plan we did at Hillsboro was done in 2005, and we typically do these every 10 years or so. And so this update will create an integrated plan by determining the role of the Hillsboro Airport and provide a better understanding of the complex relationship between aviation and non-aviation uses, as well as the adjacent land. We have a comprehensive stakeholder and public involvement process as part of the two-year project, including a 16-member planning advisory committee, and the committee will be composed of community, commercial, and government interests. A commissioner will also be assigned as a liaison to the project, and you will, of course, get updates along the way as we proceed. And the coordination of information and results will occur to ensure the best alignment for future development. And Steve Nagy, our GA senior manager, is here to provide a recommendation.
Good morning. So, Steve, before you start, I just want to report back to you that I've just recently received a very favorable comment on you and your group's action at Troutdale in the process of that extension of the runway and work that we propose to do there. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you want to give a full presentation?
Yeah, I think you do that efficiently. And
sure.
We'll remember, we've got people on the telephone as you speak.
So, good morning, everyone. Just as a reminder, Hillsboro Airport here is our largest of our two GA airports. It's a full-service GA airport. We have three runways, a federal aviation system, one of the only three FAA air traffic control towers in the state, full instrumentation capabilities for all weather capabilities for aircraft. We have three fixed base operators. Local corporate flight departments are based there, many people are familiar with. Last year, we did about almost 190,000, 186,000 operations at the airport. That's takeoffs and landings. And that puts us in second place. And consistently, historically, Hillsboro has been the number two airport as far as operations, busiest airport in the state. The economic impact of Hillsboro Airport is a large portion of why we were doing this. There's roughly 1,470 jobs at the airport. Almost 700 of those are direct jobs at the airport itself, with average incomes of over $47,000. That's everything from line service all the way to the owners of the corporations. $107 million in business revenue, $83 million in personal income for all those individuals working at the airport. And local and state contribution taxes have been almost $8.5 million over the this was in 2016, just last year. Hillsboro Airport has historically been surrounded by Hillsborough, and it's the has been increasing in its growth of the city around the airport. So one of the things that we will be looking at substantially with this master plan is the compatibility of the airport and the city. How will the two get along? Those are issues mainly around noise and operations of aircraft. The airport master plan itself will be broken into phases. This is a kind of a graphic of the overall schedule. We'll be starting out with a background, looking at what we have, inventorying the airport's facilities. We will move into an analysis, looking at what requirements we need in the future, what will our forecast need be for aviation facilities. Then we will put together a set of alternatives, choose a preferred alternative with our project advisory committee, and then bring that forward along with an airport layout plan, which is our formal document that we submit to the FAA, as well as a capital improvement plan. And then ongoing, after the master plan is completed roughly 2 years from now, we will still be going on with community engagement, follow-on studies, and then actually development of those of that preferred alternative. Some of the special areas of interest that we'll be looking at with this master plan that aren't typically included in a master plan, but seismic resiliency is one big thing that's come up both in the discussion leading up to the master plan, as well as now with our understanding of the Cascadia subduction risks. Stormwater, which affects all of our development. What do we do with it? How do we handle it? Community access and community compatibility, which includes noise and air quality issues with it. And then we've been looking at focused site planning in some of the areas around the airport for both aviation development and for non-aviation industrial development on port land surrounding the airport. Public outreach is a large component of everything that we do. As Vince mentioned, we have a public outreach planning advisory committee made up of 16 members. You can see here the representation on it. We'll have City of Hillsborough, Washington County representatives, local environmental interests in the area with Clean Water Services, our local FAA, citizens at large, airport businesses. We also have to and are looking to engage with the community and not just the traditional way of open houses and project advisory committee meetings. We will be hosting some online open houses, as well as our web, social media, and presence as well on the project.
So, Steve, one thing on that point, I think it might be helpful, given that there is a very large Hispanic and Asian community in the Hillsborough area, for you and your team to actually reach out to those people directly when they have opportunities where you can explain the plan.
Absolutely. We've done that in the past. We have bilingual project materials. One of the other things that we are looking actually is for more minority participation in the planning advisory committee as well, and our recruitment for that as well. Our project budget for the consultant team that we've selected, WH Pacific, is $1,699,549, with a total project budget of $1,920,000, with the other port and contingency costs in there. We have FAA grant funding for this project already received of $1.3 million, with a port contribution of a little over $600,000. The project was bid through the Oregon competitive bid process. We had two consultants that bid on this. We had a internal team, as well as two external members from our previous airport roundtable committee, which were a citizen at large as well as an on-airport business, that helped us with the selection of the consultants. So we actually had public involvement in the selection of the consultants for this project as well. So the staff recommendation is to request the executive director's approval or executive director's recommendation to award the personal service consulting contract related to the Hillsborough Airport Master Plan Study to WH Pacific in the amount of $1,699,549.
Any questions or comments from commissioners?
This is Mike, and I would just want to echo the president's comments about the importance of engaging local communities of color, and hopefully this project and project management strategy is influenced or supported by some of the work of the Office of Diversity there within the port. These are opportunities to begin to weave in a way of building lenses around equity and inclusion into major and mid-sized projects that are sort of intentional and sort of baked into the process. So I hope that there were fingerprints from the work of your newly created Director of Diversity over the last year.
Good comment. Any other comments or questions? Is there a motion and second to approve the recommendation?
Motion. So moved.
Second?
Second. Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Next item, again, Vince, is the improvement contract for the rental car facility.
Yeah, and I'll be doing introduction for the next two items, and Dave is going to cover both of them. So we're doing a public improvement contract for the parking addition and the consolidated rental car design build contract, and then also the construction contract amendment for the rental car QTA. And we talked about this a little bit at the December commission about the work that's coming on here. And as you know, rental cars and parking are a significant source of revenue for us. And so we're looking at creating what's known as the Packer project, a parking and consolidated rental car facility. And we'll be doing that just south of the existing parking garage today. In related to this, though, the commission approved a contract with Hoffman in January 2016 for a new quick turnaround area, which is the fuel wash area for the rental cars. We've approved a contract to Hoffman for the center utility plant chilled water capacity additions as well. And while the employee lot and the transportation provider lot portions of the QTA are in the final stages of completion, the QTA has some change conditions that are not covered in the current Hoffman scope, and so we're requesting a contract amendment to resolve this situation in the most cost-effective manner. We thought it made sense to do both of these kind of at once. So Dave is going to walk through the schematic design contract for J.E. Dunn first, and then we'll look at the QTA amendment as well.
Okay, and I would say, I mean, we've all had the materials to look at, so I think if you focus on the need for the increased coverage of costs, that'd be great.
Okay, so focus on the second item there, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll get through this. First item is the schematic design contract to J.E. Dunn, a little under $4.2 million for the...
Dave, you're going to have to speak at a speed that people on the phone can pick up what you're saying as well.
A little faster.
A little slower.
Oh, a little slower, okay.
Yeah, thanks.
So this is the schematic design contract for the parking additions and consolidated rental car facility. We call this project Packer, PACR, and you'll see that in the graphics, just slightly less than $4.2 million. The Packer facility is located just south of where we sit here today and is directly adjacent to the QTA facility under construction. I think you've probably all seen it going up out there. This is just a graphic depiction of the new Packer facility. It's under development as we speak, as far as it's going to be molded into probably a different, slightly different shape than what you see. But the large-scale components are the rental car facility on the first three floors and the public parking on the upper decks, floors four through seven. We will be releasing up to 1,600 public spaces in P1 and P2 when this facility goes into operation. And the combination of the new public facilities in this facility and in P1, P2 will meet our demands going forward for quite some time. Yeah, we are pursuing a design build format, and for this project, and that was elaborated on in June when the exemption was approved by commission. We did receive requests for proposals from five teams in September, and we interviewed four of those teams in October. The team by J.E. Dunn was selected for several reasons, their fee, their experience, and some of their approaches to the work plan. And over the last 2 months, we have negotiated the price, as you see on the bottom line, just slightly less than $4.2 million for the schematic phase only. The final design and the construction will, of course, be presented to commission later in an amendment form. So we did select the progressive design build format for many of its advantages, largely stating the fact that it's a time saver, and in saving time, we are going to get this facility online sooner, and it has financial consequences also to our advantage. The schedule for this facility, we are here today in January. We will follow that with about 8 months of schematic design. I do intend to be back to commission in the late this year for the commission action, which represents all the final design and the construction services going forward. We will then rapidly get into final design of permitting and start construction probably in the Q2 of 2018. Hope to have this facility in 2 years and online and creating the revenue. The budget and funding for this project are as follows. I think it's laid out there pretty straightforward. The Dunn contract, the contract today, the $4.2 million, will come out of the $190.9 million first line item. Then we have a second line item there. We are doing some early work under the QTA. In the tune of about $3.1 million, which we'll discuss further in the next item. And next month, Chris Edwards will be in the seat to talk about some early work associated with Packer and will present an amendment to the Taxiway B contract for roughly $2 million. The contingency of $40 million stand out a little bit on this budget sheet, but again, we have absolutely no detailed design underway now, and we're discovering new items of scope daily almost on this, again, since there has been no design work. So it represents about 16-17% of the budget, and it's just, I think it's right in line for me to be. The funding source is labeled below. It's a combination of airport bonds and customer facility charges, back debt. Both of them are general revenue bonds. So with that, staff would like to recommend approval of the executive director's recommendation to award a schematic design contract to J.E. Dunn Construction.
So just so I'm clear, maybe everybody else is as well or not, and looking at these documents previously, this is for new work that's part of the bigger project and the rental car facility.
Yes.
And not to be confused with the request for the additional amount to the contractor on
right.
The turnaround.
Right. Correct. Right. Correct.
Does everybody understand that?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a brand new facility here that we're talking about.
Just done work.
For those of you on the phone, you understand this as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I do want to hear a bit more about the thinking behind the significantly larger contingency. And have there been past situations where you've had to approach a major project without the kind of background? And it just seems to be a huge number, and I'm trying to figure out where, you know, what caused you to strike it at that point.
Well, generally, this is the very first design build that the port's done. Generally, we always, if we have, on our CMGC or other negotiated contracts, we have a 30 or 40% design document set to help us or aid us in getting accurate estimates created. In this case, the only details that we have related to this project are in graphic depiction. This facility has not been laid out on the ground to find out where the limits of construction, how much demolition is going to be required, where the interferences are going to be. And so we are very early in the stages of determining just what the numbers look like on this. And so, again, 16%, I think heading into most CMGC-style contracts, we would have between 10 and 15% contingency. And this is 16.5 of the total budget. And it is essentially just my opinion, I guess, at that point in time of where we should be with this. And I think that the numbers add up. I think we will realize that this $40 million contingency, there will be significant portions of that used. And we discover those daily as we have meetings and we discuss this with Dunn going forward. So I don't think that really answers your question about the large number there, other than that's the way the math worked out for me. And
I might just add, Mike, this is Bill Wyatt, that in my experience here, at least, the size of the contingency is in direct proportion to the extent of the design work. as you get further into the project, you have greater design, you understand typically more about what's involved in the project, and the contingency number starts to shrink. Oftentimes, it moves into the project itself, so that by the time you put a shovel in the ground, the level of contingency is actually quite a bit smaller. And it may well be that the size of the overall project, the construction contract, for example, gets larger, or the contingency just goes away. But we're just at a point where we know what we want to do. We know how we're going to do it. We just don't know a lot about the specific details of the design because it hasn't been completed yet. And so it's not unusual. In fact, we had a dry run of this issue before what we thought was going to be the commission meeting here 2 weeks ago. And I saw this very slide, and David will remember, I said, okay, well, be ready to talk about the contingency because it's a large number. And I think the answer is it is large because we don't have a design yet. And we will, obviously, before we can proceed. But until then, it's just prudent to have a fairly large number like that so that as we know more, we can account for changes or things that we can't yet see because we don't have a design.
We'll have a lot better definition in the fourth quarter of this year, and the JE Dunn will be putting the numbers to paper. We'll have a significant refinement to this budget at that time.
So I think this is a follow-up question, but given that this is a design-build combination contract, I assume we're keeping in mind what savings we expected to achieve at the front end. It would be interesting, I think, to see whether or not we've actually achieved those savings, given that we have the larger contingency, right?
Correct, yeah. We'll be definitely comparing this this format to our standard formats of delivery and making sure that we meet the projected, or at least attempting to meet these projected time savings. We'll be tracking this as we go.
Any other questions or comments? Is there a motion and second to approve the recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion opposed? The motion carries. Thank you.
Yay, thank you.
And now we can move to the next.
Now we can issue. Move on. Now this. This particular item is the second item, and it is a change order to the QTA contract, which is being performed by Hoffman out there to the amount of $4.327 million, increasing the overall contract to just a little over $62.5 million. Again, this is our graphic depiction of the facility. It's it was presented a couple other commission meetings.
Why don't you pull your microphone just a little closer?
So okay. How's that?
There
we go. Okay. So, again, the graphic depiction, the facility will, in large part, look like this when completed. Two-level facility. I think we need to keep in mind that the project does consist of three separate sites, the QTA site and the recently completed port employee lot that we're now using, and a hold lot for taxis and buses that's out on 82nd and Air Cargo Way. These are all highlighted in yellow, so there are three components to this project. This is a webcam shot. We have a webcam out on the corner of P2, which provides continuous feedback to our project, our primary project site. This was taken a couple weeks ago during pile driving operations. This was just before the snowstorm, and snowstorm set us back maybe a week or two. But it largely looks like this now. Pile driving is complete, and they're putting the pile caps on top of the piles. We're ready to set precast elements in a week or two also. So the primary focus of this change order to Hoffman is based on the fact that the Packer site is going to be built directly over our primary Pacific Power and Light utility feeds. There's three primary feeders coming to the CUP, and along with all of the South Airfield lighting circuits, and all the data and communications that go to the exit toll plaza. Those all have to be relocated or will be relocated, need to be relocated under the Packer project. When we got into looking at the details of that, really the only way to route these substantial assets is to go through the QTA site currently under construction. You can see those assets in blue and red, the new assets, relocated assets, going east out of the CUP. So the only way to really implement or construct those without having to dig up the newly completed QTA assets of pavement and utilities that are putting in was to change order these assets in. That maneuver saves us $1 million in tear out and rebuild. Should we have waited? The option was to wait until Packer was underway in 2018, and it would have cost us substantial funds to try and get those assets put in the ground without, you know, interfering not only the cost, the additional cost, but the disruption to the ongoing QTA operations is significant. All the rental cars will be washed and fueled over here, and so they would have to run through the construction site too, and it would have been a significant disruption. So you'll see the solid lines, but those are all represented in a $3 million portion of this contract change. The shaded portions that connect or reconnect all of these circuits down back into the airfield and into their original location will be presented to you next month by Chris Edwards as an amendment to the taxiway B project. So she will be here. And that the cost of those, that particular change, is roughly $2 million. So kind of a detailed spreadsheet here, which summarizes in the first column the impacts to the Hoffman contract, and the second column is specifically related to the QTA budget impacts. So the contract value, the original contract for the QTA in January of 2016 was amended in June of 2016 to add the CUP chiller to the 5-point, and then that brought the contract to $58 million. Today, with the proposed amendment 2, we have got $3.029 million of Packer scope, which is the relocation of all those circuits that I discussed in that one slide. There was also some small work that we had to do for the new travel center that's going in out on 82nd and Air Cargo Way adjacent to the hold lot. And then we had about $1,262,000 of additions to the QTA scope, of which about $600,000 of that was related to a 5 to 6 month delay in the permitting process through the city. So we had an extensive back and forth with them that extended the schedule quite a while. So bringing that the total proposed amendment today to $4.3 million, and then the new contract amount will be this bottom line. As you see on the right-hand column, the only impact to the QTA budget was the $1.262 million, and new construction value that gets carried over into the QTA budget is $53.668. So there was a budget revision to the QTA subsequent to this number being calculated. You'll see that we also have some additional consultant services. Again, the 5 to 6 months of addition. All of the time extensions create a need for additional manpower on site. And so I've made adjustments there. And then I did adjust the contingency downward $500,000 because both of our parking lot portions of this project are pretty much completed, so the risk of those overruns is diminished, and so basically the contingency was reduced. So the new total is $67.312 million in the budget, and that has been approved internally. So the revised schedule is represented here. I'm in Q1 of 2017. We expect to complete this project to construction. You see the extension in quarter one of 2018, roughly February, and get this facility up and running. And then at which time we'll start Packer construction in earnest. Those two dovetail together. So with that, staff would like to recommend approval of the change amendment to the Hoffman contract in a little over $4.3 million.
Any questions or comments? So seems like a large change, given what what the, probably the original contingency was. We're talking percentages, and this is about 20% or thereabouts.
It is a relatively large change.
So have we gone back to figure out why this happened?
Well, like the vast majority of the dollars is in, the reason this happened is that the Packer project was approved, and we got to looking at that in earnest well after we were working on the QTA. I think that's the major.
The Packer scope, so that money's coming out of the Packer budget, but because it's now underneath the hot, so it's not affecting the budget of QTA, so Packer is actually going to go down in its scope associated with this. So it's work that we would otherwise be doing. It just makes more sense to do it in advance of the Packer work. And we'll save, as Dave indicated, we'll save about $1 million overall by doing that.
You know, this this series of projects, I think, is just a perfect evidence of the hip bone being connected to the thigh bone at the airport. You just can't do one thing without it affecting another. And I think Stan's point is a really good one here. It's just, we're advancing this work so we don't have to do it all over again.
Okay. Other questions, comments?
Yeah, yeah, it was identified, I thought, earlier, the circuits and the move, but it was just the timing on that that you discovered needs to change, and therefore...
Correct.
Okay, thanks. Motion and second to approve the recommendation.
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
And I think the last item here is the bargaining agreement with the Marine Facility Maintenance Group.
Yes, it's a 5-year renewal agreement with the District Council of Trade Unions, who represents 20 employees in our Marine Maintenance Department. And these folks provide excellent service for our maintenance at terminals T2, 4, and 6. And it's for a 5-year deal from July of 2016. And we've been negotiating since February of 2016, and we're able to get to a tentative agreement in the middle of December. And a couple days later, the staff ratified it. So we're very excited about that. And Blaze is here to present the item for your approval.
If you may, as business manager and financial secretary of IBW Local 48, I have an interest in any action that affects Local 48 at the ports, terminals, and airports. Therefore, I'm declaring a potential but not actual conflict of interest. I will participate in the discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Presentation?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You've received my slides previously, so I'll build off of those. Yes, this is a 5-year agreement. Wages, first one there you see is a 3% retro that goes back to 7/1/16. And this is based primarily on the fact that this group and this union, group of unions is actually seven, was about 0.5% lower over the last 3 years than our other trades internally. So we're sensitive to the equity there with the other trade groups. During the last 3 years, their increases were at 1.47% and tracking lower than actually the average of the CPIW Portland second half. This group was not on that index, but was on a different index, and I'm pleased to report now they're on the same index as every other contract that we have with our representative employees. All eight contracts are now under that. We know at this point that for 7/1/17, the feds have now reported the CPIW Portland second half at 2.2, so they will receive the minimum of the 2.25 there. So very close to what we expected that to be, actually. Health and welfare, they're going to be moving to the high deductible health plan with Kaiser and the HMO, or I'm sorry, with Cigna and the HMO with Kaiser. This is continued movement towards the blueprint that was established first with admin in calendar year 2015, and the first represented groups moved into that in 2016. So that's continuing as planned, and this group is moving to that as well. We, as part of this contract, negotiated right fitting. It's probably the best term to use. There's sick leave with the other trades that are represented here at the port. So we have the changes in sick leave there to mirror that, so that they're now on a par with those other trades. In looking at their vacation bans, those were somewhat out of whack with their seniority. So that the 10 through 14 year length of service will be changed from 18 to 20 days. And the those in the 20 through 24 year length of service changed from 22 days to 25 days. I do want to note that there is a typo in the actual printed item on that, which says 20 to 22. It should be 22 to 25. They're already at 20 to 22 days a year for that last band, that 20 to 24 year length of service. So I want to note that correction. This group is moving to the critical illness and accident plan as first established with the police when they moved to this. So this is an equivalent to that plan. This was also extended to Marine Security in the last rounds of negotiations. They are going to the same short-term disability plan that administrative employees are on, another movement toward consistency among our groups. They will receive a lump sum of $750 in first pay period subsequent to approval. And I also mentioned in here that they moved formally to the changes we had made in 2015 in our alcohol and controlled substances policy. Most of those changes affected admin employees, but we made the formal change in this contract. The estimated financial impact in terms of new dollars, we have this laid out here in this chart. It's a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of 3.26, again, consistent with what we're seeing with other groups around the port. So staff recommends approval of the executive director's recommendation to enter into collective bargaining agreement with the District Council of Trade Unions.
Any questions or comments?
No.
Is there a motion and second for approval?
I move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Blaze, for getting this done and the report.
Thank you, sir. I'd just like to acknowledge we've got a couple of the reps from the unions who were there at the table. Bob Carroll from Local 48, IBEW 48, who was lead negotiator, and Pat Christensen from UA 290 representing our plumbers. So okay. I want to acknowledge them.
Thanks to you guys as well. And I think that concludes our business, so we will adjourn. Thank you.
Thanks.
And you folks on the telephone, you're free to go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. Everyone have a good weekend.